All right. Okay, here we go. So it's my pleasure today to introduce our guest speaker, who is Reverend Patrick J. Harbula. Patrick Harbula has been a spiritual leader, a counselor, and a coach for over 30 years, and he reaches hundreds of thousands with his writing and personal and media appearances. Here are some bullet points on what Patrick has accomplished over the years. He is the author of The Magic of the Soul, Applying Spiritual Power to Daily Living, which is being used as an elective course for the Science of Mind training as part of the series of Centers for Spiritual Living courses for practitioner prerequisites. And it's also his brand, he also has a brand new book, Meditation, The Simple and Practical Way. He is the founder of the Living Purpose Institute and the creator of the Life Coaching Certification Program and Primal Fire Intensive. He was ordained as an independent religious science minister by the late Dr. Earl Barnum in 1985 and affiliated with CSL in 2010. He is also ordained and recognized as a Doctor of Divinity through Spiritual Unity Movement, of which he was the president for 12 years. He trained in spiritual psychology under the late Vivian King. He founded Meditation Magazine in 1985. He was formerly a director for Sage Publications, a world-renowned social science publisher. Patrick will not be available after the service to sign his book, but you can purchase them from Amazon.com or Patrick's website. And he is speaking on inner peace during a worldwide pandemic. It's my pleasure to welcome Patrick Harbula to the stage. Thank you. Namaste.
So much fun, and I haven't been able to do that on stage for so long. I was just so excited when Bonnie, I love this woman, by the way. Y'all love her, right? Sent me an email and said, hey, I don't know if you're speaking live anymore, but do you want to come and speak next Sunday? And I said, I'm missing it, you know? So I've done plenty of live streaming, you know, or recording for services, you know, in my home, but there's nothing like just being here with people. So I am so honored to be here. And how about this this musician for today? That song was so beautiful. Really does just fit right well with what we're going to talk about today. So I woke up this morning and I got a flash of inspiration, and that was to go against every rule that I have learned about how to deliver an inspiring talk. And because the way it works best is you pick a subject and you have, you know, one or two points, and then you tell a bunch of really great stories about it, and you just kind of hammer that one point. And I decided, look, the title of the talk is Inner Peace During a Worldwide Pandemic. So what I just want to share with you is a number of techniques that I have found super helpful for dealing with intense challenges in our lives. Anyone feel any challenge lately, by the way, in your life? Okay, so I'm just going to read off the subjects we're going to cover. One is keeping it real. Two is positive thinking. Three is meditation, very important, I'm sure. How many people are here are regular meditators? All right. How about you at home? I can't see your hands, but I'm sure there's a good percentage of you. Emotional healing and release, which that song spoke to so beautifully. And non-attachment. And finally, self-love, the most important of all. So keeping it real, stop watching the news. Or at least limit it. You know, I mean, you're going to hear how many deaths there were today, whether you're watching the news, whether you turn it on or not. Social media is going to come to you, right? And look, the news is programmed to focus on the worst possible way of presenting all information, because that's what keeps people watching the news, right? And people get addicted to it. So just a couple little points that you don't hear on the news. And somewhere I saw that you have like a good news announcements or something. Oh, I don't know. Okay. So, you know, the news won't often tell you this, that of the 85 million cases in the world, 60 million have recovered, right? They'll tell you the deaths. They'll tell you how many are sick now, right, or how many have been sick, but they don't often tell you how many people have recovered. You know, as bad as it is, and it's not good, there's still only 2.4 active cases, 2.4% of the population in the U.S. have COVID actively because of the amount who have recovered. It's 0.03% worldwide. So U.S. isn't doing quite as well. 3.3% in California. So, you know, it's just not as bad as the news will present it. So keep it real, right? Trust your intuition. There's no reason to panic. There is reason to be careful, to be wearing masks, to be social distancing, but there's no reason to panic. Do I have agreement with that? Yay. All right. Okay, so meditation. If you're not already meditating, what better time to start? And the interesting thing that I find with people, and I used to experience this myself years ago, is some of my clients, I'll be talking to them, and they'll say, yeah, I've just given up meditation lately. You know, it's interesting, when we're stressed or not feeling well, we tend to give up the things that actually help us the most, right? So now is the time to ramp up our spiritual practice, yes? So, what a great crowd, by the way. You're making almost as much noise as if we had a full sanctuary today. So, and here's a really simple, if you haven't meditated, you're not a regular meditator, or if you do meditate, I will invite you to add this to your meditation. You know, the most profound part of my meditation is when I go into silent mind. It's just pure bliss. There's no better experience in the world than that for me. But the most important part of my meditation, which I do at the very beginning, is simply visualizing my day. What do I want to accomplish today? And more importantly, with what spirit, with what kind of presence, with what energy do I want to accomplish what I'm going to accomplish? With joy, with freedom, with inner peace. And just setting that tone, I guarantee you, may not be the best day of your life, but will be infinitely better than without that practice, right? So add that to your meditation, or even if you're not meditating and you've tried meditation and it hasn't been working for you, 3 minutes, even 1 minute is better than no minutes, right? 3 minutes to just visualize your day. Really simple practice. Okay, positive thinking. Now, I'm not going to spend too much time on this because people who are viewing this, people who are here, people who have been in this teaching for a while, positive thinking is, we know about that, right? We've been practicing this a long time. I will give you a quick practice, and if you want to contact me or on social media or whatever, I'll give you some more information about this. But I'm going to give you the real short version of it. It's called pivoting. It comes from the Hicks material, the Abraham teachings. And as it's described, it's using our emotions as a biofeedback device for where our consciousness is. So we can raise our consciousness around specific areas of our life that might be challenging us, whether it be health, finance, whatever else it might be. So, simply stated, if I'm feeling discomfort of any kind, it means I'm focused on what I don't want. That makes sense, right? And so that becomes the cue, that becomes the reminder when I'm feeling discomfort. And the beauty of this, the brilliance of it, is that we feel discomfort a lot during the day, right? Especially if we're focusing on what we don't want. And so it's a constant reminder. As soon as we connect that feeling discomfort as the reminder to pivot or shift my attention to what I do want, then it becomes a practice that becomes more and more consistent. What I've added to this practice, which makes it super practical and super powerful, and I see miracles happen for people within 30 days or less, is this. And you guys were in the Busting Loose class, right? So you remember this. You still doing it? Ah, look at that. You get an A+. it's a measurement system. So, and it's very simple. You simply look back, you do a review of your day, and you say what percentage of the day today was I focused on what I want compared to what I don't want in these specific areas that might be challenging me? So if it's finance, again, health, if it's a relationship, what percentage of the time when I was thinking about relationship or health or all three of these, right? You can just have a category and then just write down a number each day. What percentage of the time was I feeling good thinking about that subject comparing it to feeling discomfort? And the simplicity of this is that by virtue of being a human being, you're not going to want to write down 10% or whatever it is too many days in a row, right? And by the way, most people, even people, I've done this practice with ministers who have been in this teaching for, you know, for decades. And if something's really challenging them, the percentage that it's been over the last 30 days will be like less than 10% focused on the positive. It's just natural. As human beings, we tend to, when we're challenged, be in problem mode rather than solution mode. When people get above 50% consistently, then we're in solution mode. And what happens, you know, the metaphysical explanation for it is when I'm focused more on the positive than the negative, then when I'm focused more, I lost my train of thought. When I focus more on the positive than the negative, then I create a vibrational match, right? And by virtue of the law of attraction, it must be attracted to me. But practically speaking, what I see happening for people is when we're focused on the positive, we are in solution mode. We see possibilities at 60% that we can't see at 40%, let alone 10%. Does all this make sense? Now, the interesting thing is, as I've offered this practice to probably thousands of people now over the last 5 or 10 years, most people will not write it down every day. And I think it is because it just is too darn simple. You know, we're so programmed in life, in our society, to think that anything worthwhile has to be really hard, right? We have to put a lot of work and effort into it. And I have found it's the exact opposite. The simpler the practice, the more powerful and the more useful it is. Because spirit is simple. It's just about being in light and love and freedom and joy. And we human beings like to complicate things, don't we? All right. So, emotional healing. You know, I want to talk about the relationship between the two, positive thinking and relation and emotional healing, because positive thinking is extremely important, but we have to be very careful with it, because any practice, spiritual mind treatment, pivoting, which I just described to you, visualization, powerful practices, but the reason we have to be careful is we can sometimes be inadvertently repressing our emotions. So we call it, in the teaching, spiritual bypass. How many have heard that that term, okay? So that's when I'm focused on the positive, and I'm actually trying to avoid the uncomfortable feelings. And so I go to this perfectly blissful place, but in my gut, there's this turmoil, right, churning around. And so that's the cue. Our body is such a great biofeedback device, right? And so if I do a spiritual mind treatment or a pivoting process, and I've still got a knot in my gut, it means one thing, that there is a deeper level of release and healing that needs to occur. And so we have to go to a deeper process. You know, when I first was studying science of mind, back in like 1980, I started with Science of Mind 101 at the Redondo Church of Religious Science. And you know, at that time, it was all about the mind, all about the consciousness. There was no talk about feeling or emotion, and certainly not like shadow work, right? There was no such thing as a shadow back in those days. Now, the beautiful thing about New Thought and Science of Mind is it's open at the top. So now, as it has evolved, there's more and more techniques added to positive thinking about healing our emotions, releasing our emotions, expressing our emotions, Ho'oponopono, right? And so I want to share with you some techniques for emotional healing and release that have been valuable to me. And by the way, it occurred to me recently, I was kind of trying to figure out why during this worldwide pandemic and all the limitations we're experiencing, I'm still living at a really high level of freedom and joy virtually all of the time. And I realize it's not just because of positive thinking, even though I have become really good at that. It's because of the decades of emotional healing that I've worked that I've done, of shadow work that I've done. And so what I find is that I was just kind of examining this process and the dynamic between the two. I think most of us, not everyone, most of us, you know, begin on a spiritual path and we get some information about positive thinking, science of mind, new thought, self-help, right? And we start applying these techniques and things change in our lives. And this is kind of the natural course. And then all of a sudden, it doesn't work for something really important. And then we start getting into distress about that. And sometimes we kind of spiral downward. And then we find the emotional healing. That's what happened for me. I went through 6 years of training, became ordained as a Science of Mind minister, and I had a lot of repressed emotion that I had never dealt with through all of that training. And so that's when I got into training with spiritual psychology, transpersonal psychology. And I think that's why my book, The Magic of the Soul, has become so popular with Science of Mind and become, you know, one of it's now just been revamped as a core curriculum for Centers for Spiritual Living, is because it has this combination of both Science of Mind, New Thought, and spiritual psychology. And it offers many techniques, some of which I'm going to share with you now. So what happens then after we do this deep emotional healing work is our positive thinking becomes more holistic. It's not just about being positive about things we want, but it's also embracing everything. That's radical gratitude, when we embrace everything in life. I'm going to talk more about that when I get to non-attachment. So here's some techniques for emotional healing. Number one, and by the way, this last week, and I'm sure this happened so I could share it with you this Sunday service, I was feeling really down. I get depressed maybe once every 3 years. And I was feeling kind of down because of a number of the things that were happening in my life. Had a fight with my wife, and just everything kind of came crashing down. And so what I do when I'm feeling down like that is I give myself complete permission to feel the feelings, to be in a lousy mood, for the day, right? 2 days, if it lasts that long, it rarely does. But the reason it dissipates so quickly is by giving myself permission. So this phrase came to me a while back, and that is resist nothing, embrace everything. Resist nothing, embrace everything. And so when I embrace my feelings, that is the healing, almost instantly. So usually when this happens, it's like half an hour later, I'm good to go. In this case, it took a whole day, right? And I'll tell you another little piece about that, and this would be a technique that you could use. When I sit down for meditation, if I have any tension in my body, whether it's from a sadness, whether it's from an anger or frustration, I just let it out. Once I notice it, I let it out. Because if I don't let it out, and that might mean just cry a little bit, it might mean scream a little bit, it might be just feel whatever the feeling is, shame, grief. And then I go into my meditation, and those are the deepest meditations that I ever have. The way I like to describe it is if I'm half filled up with a frustration or a sadness or a fear or a grief or a shame, then I can only fill up halfway with spirit. As soon as I release it, I am now an empty vessel to be filled completely with spirit and in fact overflowing. How does that land? Let's take a deep breath into that. And when we give ourselves permission to just feel what we're feeling, it is a beautiful act of self-love, the most important of these practices. So I want to touch on voice dialogue. You know, the pivoting work that I shared with you is the most important work that I do with clients, because that's where I see the miracles happen. The most powerful work I do with people is voice dialogue. And don't have time to go into a lot of details about it, but essentially, it's talking to the parts of ourselves that we like the least and role-playing as those parts to find out what they are needing that they're not getting. And one of the things that they need that they're not getting is love, because that's what everyone and every part of ourselves wants more than anything, is love. And so when we can love the part of ourselves that is fearful, when we can love the part of ourselves that is angry, when we can love the part of ourselves that is in dissatisfaction or in addiction or whatever might be challenging us, that's where the healing comes. So what I've noticed in doing this work with people over the years is the thing that we like the least about ourselves actually contains within it the very qualities that we most need to create the life that we need, that we want to live. Does that make sense? So if it's a critical voice, like, you know, subpersonality work, voice dialogue. And so you've all heard of, like, the hurt inner child, the critical inner parent, right? And so if I have this angry critical voice in my head, right, that's criticizing me when I do something wrong, then the critic is a powerful voice, right? We've all heard that voice, right? And it's powerful. It controls us when it's when we're identified with it. Roberto Assagioli, who was the founder of psychosynthesis, the system I study, pioneer in voice dialogue work, said this: anything we're identified with controls us. Anything we can disidentify from, I can control. Or the words I like is I can direct it in a new way. So as long as I think I am that critical voice, or I am reactive to that critical voice, I can't change it. But as soon as I disidentify and recognize, oh, that's not who I am, it's simply a part of me. In a way, I become the parent, the loving parent to all the parts of myself. So here's the way to really make it simple. Oh, what I was going to say is, so the critical voice is powerful. It's reliable. It shows up anytime I screw up, right? It's reliable. It's consistent. And so what I find is people that have a really active critical voice are people that need power, consistency, and reliability to create the lives that they need, right? So here's the really simple way to practice this in the moment. And that is, if anything that you notice in yourself that you don't like, that you're resisting, again, resist nothing, embrace everything, imagine it's a small child coming to you and you're its loving parent. So I hear teachers even say sometimes, you know, we have to embrace our shadow and embrace every part of ourselves. And then 2 minutes later they say, but I got to get over this fear so I can go on and accomplish this thing, right? Well, if you said to a small child, a fearful child, I have to get over you, how would it respond? It would become more fearful. And by the way, it's going to scream even louder. What we resist, not... Here's a phrasing that I say probably 40 times a week to clients in lectures and in ceremonies. What we resist not only persists, but magnifies. What we embrace becomes our ally, our teacher, our healer. Resist nothing, embrace everything. So non-attachment. See, I'll give you one more exercise in emotional healing. This is kind of radical, and it's what I did for several years when I got into spiritual psychology, and I knew that I needed to heal these emotions inside. And so I started doing this exercise, which came from a system called Body Electronics, which I won't go into. But I would go to a nature place, and I would just, like a park, really early in the morning when there's no one around, run as fast as I can, and then lay down on the ground, and just notice where there's tension in my body, and press on that area, and let the sound out. I do this exercise in retreats, when I lead retreats, and people will do it with a partner, and just scream it out. Just cry it out, whatever it is. And then, once there's a pause, once there's a deep breath, then just fill up with light. Because some people do the cathartic release. Some people are really good at getting the emotion out, but then they don't shift to the positive. So it's a both and, right? So I want to notice when there's tension in my body, let it out. Once it's let out, infill with divine light and love, focus on the positive. So you can adapt that to just, you know, the physical exercise is helpful. You can do jumping jacks in your home. You don't have to go to a park and do it. But just lie down on your bed and just press the area and let the sound out, right? Really, really deep emotional release. So non-attachment. By the way, the last time I was here, that was my lecture was on non-attachment. So if you didn't see that or want to review, probably on the website, right? You have an archive of them. Really check that out. And really non-attachment, Byron Katie, we're starting a class on Tuesday based on Byron Katie's class, latest book, A Mind at Home with Itself, her best book ever. How many people are Byron Katie fans, read some of her work? The most enlightened teaching on the planet, in my estimation. If I had more time, I'd just talk for hours about her. But I'm going to read you a little passage that can be challenging to people. Last time I read this at Center for Spiritual Living, Simi Valley, there was a lot of groans in the audience. So we'll see how this goes. Even physical pain is imagined. When you're asleep, does your body hurt? When you're hurting and the phone rings and it's the call you've been longing for and you're mentally focused on the conversation, there's no pain. If your thinking changes, the pain changes. I once stuck my hand too far into the mouth of a champion juicer. I heard the sound of crunching. And when I pulled my hand out, it was streaming with blood. The blood was bright red. I had never seen anything so beautiful. Roxanne, that's her daughter, who was standing beside me, was horrified. She had to be horrified because her mind was focused on past and future, on images of my hand in the juicer, and the sound that was already gone, and the pain she projected onto me, and a future where she had a mother who was missing some fingers. But in reality, the whole experience was beautiful. The blood on the fingertips was healthy and lovely and free. I didn't project a past or a future, so I couldn't feel any pain. There was nothing to obscure the radiant moment. The mangled fingers were the Buddha. The blood was the Buddha. The beloved, horrified daughter was the Buddha too. I waited for pain to happen, and I was open to the illusion that would create pain, but as love would have it, there was none. A couple of fingernails were gone, and one fingertip was a bit chewed up. We got the peroxide and gauze and wrapped the fingers, but there was no need to take care of me because there was nothing to take care of. The fingers, the blood, the juicer, the daughter, the observer, they were all characteristics of the Buddha. So this work, the Byron Katie work, she calls it the work, which is simply challenging our beliefs, our limiting beliefs, in a very systematic way, leads us to a place of inner peace in a way that no other teaching does. So if you're available Tuesdays, 6:30 to 8:30 Pacific time, if you're watching this from the East Coast, tune in. I said to Annette today that we're going to limit it to 25 people because I want to be an intimate group. Last time I did a class here, we had about 45 people, and it was great. It was dynamic, right? But there's a lot of sharing and interpersonal work that's done in this class, so we want to keep it small. So I think I'm about to close. I'll tell you a story about non-attachment. My teacher, Vivian King, she was my teacher in spiritual psychology. And, oh, and by the way, I'll say something about that reading that I just offered, that, you know, that's an ideal, getting to a place where I can put my hand in a, in fact, when I've done this class before, that becomes the running joke, that the graduation exercise will involve a champion juicer. So we're not going to do that. That's an ideal, and what I would have to share all through the course is that living life as Byron Katie does, from this wide perspective, seeing the world, life, through the eyes of one's soul, which she does consistently, is an ideal that we may never reach, but it's a roadmap. And the closer we get to that, the more inner peace we can feel. So again, if you want to get to deeper inner peace, join us on Tuesday nights. Or read the book if you can't. It's a great book. So Vivian King was my teacher in spiritual psychology. And after I graduated, she moved out of the state. We would send a card or letter every now and then. And I heard from a friend that she was in an accident. She was hit by a drunk driver, became a quadriplegic overnight. She was in a coma for 6 weeks. Her head had swollen up the size of a basketball. I was told that she was going to be in Long Beach at a hospital there the next weekend. It was just perfect synchronicity. I went to visit her. Her head was normal size now, but her face was very distorted. But she still had this beautiful smile that she always had. And they were deciding where to move her. And so I said, you know, and it was either going to be in the San Fernando Valley or in Orange County. I said, well, I live in the San Fernando Valley. If she ends up there, then I can come and help with physical therapy and visit her and so on and so forth. And so she had friends in Orange County too, but she ended up being placed in a rehab place that was they didn't know where I lived. It was 2 blocks away from where I live, right? So perfectly planned, right, how the universe does things. And so I went and I was, you know, doing spiritual mind treatment with her and energy healing and helping with physical therapy. And it sounds like I'm doing a lot for her, but I was the one who was receiving the real gift. She was a saint of a woman who all throughout it, you know, I asked her one time, I said, are you angry with the person who hit me? And she looked at me like confused. And she said, I don't have time to be angry. I've got to focus on my healing, on my well-being. So She lived another 2 years and decided to leave the planet because she said, you know, I'm a dancer and I long to dance again. So she decided to leave her physical body. That's a whole nother longer story. But I'll tell you this one little point. There was one time when I was visiting her and she was eating. And when she'd eat, she had like a, she lost the use of her voice and, you know, her limbs, but she had a mechanical arm that would, so she could feed herself. She didn't want to be fed by other people. And she'd be getting food all over her face and all over her apron. And as I say that, you might think somebody would be in, I would be in distress if that was me. But she would have a smile the entire time. Because what she taught me in spiritual psychology is that we are more. I am more than my body. I am more than my feelings. I am more than even my thoughts. She knew. She saw the cosmic joke in all of it. And there were times when I'm sure she felt pain about all this, but she also saw the truth of who she was. And so one of the last things she said to me is, you know, Patrick, I'm a teacher who she could, her voice was amplified, and her whispers would be amplified so I could understand her. She said, I'm a teacher who can no longer speak. I'm a writer who can no longer write. She wrote several amazing books. But as long as I have a physical body, I can remain a presence of peace in this world. So when I get challenged in life, I often think about what Vivian went through. And if she could still be a presence of peace and love and light in the world, then no matter what's challenging me, I can. And you can too, yes? So the last thing I'll just touch on self-love. You know, if I often ask people if I sense that they have a low self-esteem, on a scale of 1 to 10, how much do you love yourself? I'll ask you that question. You don't have to answer. It's rhetorical. But if it's less than a 5, that's the most important spiritual work that can do, is raising that number. If it's less than a 10, there's room for growth, right? When we get to a 9 or a 10, every spiritual practice that I've mentioned for inner peace comes into alignment and into expression naturally when we love ourselves that much. The phrase that came to me a while back talking to a client on the phone is that when I love myself unconditionally, what I realize is that I am not myself. I am in fact the self. I am in fact pure love. And so are you. I love you. Thank you. Who was that masked man?
Thank you so much, Patrick. That was lovely. Okay, so let us take a moment and we'll pray. So I invite you to turn within and